Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is RFERL senior correspondent Tony Wasilewski. Thanks for joining me again, Tony.
It's nice to be here, Steve. Thanks for inviting me.
All right. We have a little bit of a change in the locations. I'm on the phone, and Tony's in the studio today, so apologies for any glitches, but hopefully it'll go okay. All right, well, we're going to talk about the Alexei Navalny poisoning, but I also want to discuss Belarus. Now, this is a story that you've been focusing on quite a bit, Tony, since even before the disputed presidential election was held almost a month ago now on August 9th. And I remember you said something sometime before the election that turned out to be pretty prescient. I don't recall exactly, but it was about how, given the massive displays of support ahead of the vote for Svetlana Tikhanouskaya, who essentially became the unified opposition candidate after several others were barred from the ballot and some jailed, and also given the expectation that incumbent President Alexander Lukashenko would claim a resounding victory regardless of the real result, it was hard to imagine going into the election. It was hard to imagine an outcome that would leave both sides satisfied enough to prevent unrest or at least a major dispute. Now, 4 weeks later, the result is certainly deeply in dispute. There have been protests every day, some of them very large. Tens of thousands of people demonstrated yesterday. But Lukashenko remains in power and with his authority and legitimacy seemingly badly undermined, though, by the persistent crackdown on peaceful protests. Hundreds of people were detained yesterday. Now, this podcast is called The Week Ahead in Russia, and I want to ask you about the Russian response so far. I think the consensus going into the vote and for some time afterward was or has been that Russia wanted Lukashenko to remain in power, but to be weakened and making him more malleable, more susceptible to pressure from Moscow, primarily pressure for closer integration between Russia and Belarus. Tony, would you say that's still the case, or how would you characterize Russia's approach at the moment?
Well, I definitely think that Russia is firmly on Lukashenko's side. There was a Ukrainian analyst saying that they basically have him on a short leash right now. He's very dependent on Russian support. He's isolated himself from the international community with his very brutal crackdown on protesters, the images which have outraged many people in the Western world. Russia doesn't seem or hasn't expressed much criticism of this. And so he's really kind of doubling down with Russian support. And I think this was really demonstrated by his very recent, seemingly ridiculous statement saying that the Belarusian Secret Service had intercepted a phone call showing that Navalny had actually been poisoned in Germany and not in Siberia. So, I mean, he's willing to go to great lengths to please his Kremlin masters now.
Yes, and I guess, I mean, I think you mentioned this recording. There were many signs. I mean, most observers said it was one of the more obvious fakes. One thing that struck me about it was one of the people in the West who were supposedly, you know, on the call said something like, well, this is war and, you know, anything's okay in war. It doesn't matter whether he was really poisoned. And that just struck me as something that kind of a lot of Russian officials and Russian pundits have said in the past, you know, it's like an information war, you know, anything's okay. So, you know, it seems like a case of kind of Russia accusing the West of doing or saying what it often does or says. And I think more broadly, like, you know, I guess to some degree, Russia, the way things are happening is kind of, you know, because the West is upset and, you know, and angry about the protests, I mean, that again pushes Lukashenko toward Russia and kind of makes that a fait accompli. I mean, it was striking the way before the election there was a lot of there were a lot of statements by Lukashenko, a lot of accusations by Lukashenko against Russia, you know, that Russia was trying to interfere, including the arrest of I think 33 Russian mercenaries. But shortly after the election, you know, he kind of pivoted, as he often does, and it was all about, for Lukashenko, it was all about accusing the West of you know, potentially intervening or intervening. And Russia, to some degree, has kind of gone along with that. So, you know, that's kind of one of the ways that things have shifted, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it seems like the accusations about the mercenaries, 33 mercenaries being captured in Minsk and everything, that seems such ancient history now. I mean, yeah, Russia's completely gone the opposite way, and now he's striking out at, you know, it's a color revolution. This is all being instigated from the outside. You know, he has Sergei Lavrov last week was meeting with his Belarusian counterpart, who nobody really knows because these guys are never really out there besides Lukashenko. Vladimir Makey saying, you know,
right,
you know, this, you know, and Lavrov saying that the West and NATO were making all these destructive statements about criticizing the Belarusian authorities and saying, you know, they halted a possible revolution there. So, you know, Lukashenko hears this and it's just music to his ears. And I was talking to just today with Alex Kocharov, this London-based country risk analyst, and he said definitely the Oman riot police in Minsk and elsewhere have definitely kind of had freer hands, as you can put it that way, since this Kremlin stronger voiced support for Lukashenko.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I guess one thing to watch, of course, is, you know, Russia, Putin had said, I forget this, when this was, but, you know, said that Russia is ready to send in, I guess, you know, special forces of some kind. In the event, you know, of kind of a incursion, I guess, from the West. So, you know, obviously that's a threat and a signal both to the West and Lukashenko, you know, but it does have that caveat of if necessary. And, you know, so far, you know, that hasn't been, you know, that hasn't been done as far as we know. But, you know, that's kind of that changed things as well, I believe.
Definitely. And remember before that, Lukashenko and Putin had spoken, and under their mutual defense pact, Russia and some type of in unclear circumstances would come to Belarus's aid. So there have been all kinds of these ambiguous. When Putin mentioned this quasi police force, which could include FSB and who knows, riot police or whatever, that
right.
was a much, much clearer signal. And that really was kind of quite startling, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let's turn to the poisoning of Alexei Navalny. You mentioned it in the context of Belarus. There was a big development this past week. The German government said that blood samples showed the presence in Navalny's body of a chemical nerve agent from the Novichok group. Tony, did this change things? I think a lot of people are saying that, and of course, Navalny is in the hospital in Germany. I believe he's still in an induced coma. Does this change things? I think a lot of people are saying that the finding of Novichok or something from the Novichok group increases the likelihood that the Russian state was behind the poisoning. And some are saying that this is now all but certain.
Definitely. I mean, I think this just confirmed what many people suspected. I think people were probably surprised that the Russians would have used an agent, a toxin like that, which obviously would be accessible to somebody, you would assume, with high security clearance. This would not have been available to somebody at a lower level. So that would suggest some kind of, if not Kremlin knowledge, some kind of okaying for this to happen. So
right.
it definitely looks bad for Russia, and it definitely suggests a high level of coordination there. I was reading an interesting piece by Mark Galliotti about this, saying the biggest problem for the Germans and the biggest difference from this in Salisbury in 2018, when Skripal and his daughter were also poisoned by a Novichok agent, mm-hmm. was that there the British had the right to investigate because it happened on their territory. Here, this all happened inside Russia, while Germany is now dealing with the aftermath, giving him treatment, Navalny treatment. They can't lead an investigation, and
right.
Russia will be able to kind of counter that they cannot conclusively prove that Russia was behind the Kremlin was behind the attack, and so that really will kind of hamstring them in any kind of response they can take. They can obviously enact sanctions that are well within their rights, but then Russia could come back and use that as this is this anti-Western campaign. They have no direct proof linking us to it, and yet they're still sanctioning us. So it's a tough situation.
Absolutely. That's a good point. Sort of it's different. And Russia, of course, is saying that, well, our doctors, you know, did not have this finding, you know, when he was still in Russia. So that, I guess that's the kind of the basic line that they'll use, which is, you know, credible or not. It seems more tenable than saying, well, to the British after the Skripal poisoning, to saying to the British, oh, you know, you're not giving us, you're not letting us into the investigation enough. So, you know, it's a bit of a different story there. You know, I can't help wondering the timing. I can't help wondering if there was some kind of, you know, if Belarus had something to do with this in terms of, you know, Navalny, obviously the most prominent opposition politician in Russia, and the Kremlin perhaps seeing Tsikhanouskaya, you know, how well she did in the election in Belarus, you know, or at least how much support she had, you know, indicating that she actually did quite well, and how persistent the protests had been, you know, and I just can't help wondering, of course, it's speculation, but that the Kremlin or somebody in the Kremlin thought, well, you know, we can't let this happen in future elections in Russia. And I guess we'll see, you know, what happens. Obviously, Navalny, you know, needs to recover first, and we don't really know what's happening with that and how that's going to go. But whether he'll return to Russia, be able to return to Russia, and you know, one of the ideas may have been to get him out.
I definitely agree with you. I think the Belarus definitely poses a problem for the Kremlin. It sets a bad example from their perspective. You know, give the Russian public some bad ideas about how they can, you know, find their voice and take to the street in growing numbers. And especially there's elections now coming up in Russia too. So yeah, get Navalny out. It sends a very clear message to me and to many others too. I'm sure Russians are getting that too.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're running out of time. We're going to have to wrap it up for today. Tony, great to have you on the podcast. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Steve. It was great meeting with you.
All right, I'll be back with another edition of The Week Ahead in Russia next Monday. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for my newsletter, The Week in Russia. Thanks for listening.